Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming along. There's more seats at the front if you are coming in and need somewhere to sit. This is being recorded as well, I hear. So if you want to catch up afterwards, by all means, log on and do that good stuff. My name's Simon. I'm Hedmi. I've been at Trade Me since the start of this year. I came to Trade Me from the UK, so forgive my weird Kiwi English accent that apparently I've got. The weird thing about coming to Trade Me only in the last 12 months is that exact to the day, 12 months ago, I was on stage at Edinburgh. That's me, there. So we had an improvised comedy show up in Edinburgh at the Fringe Festival last year, 12 months ago to the day. And just looking out at the crowd here, if we had this sort of crowd at my show 12 months ago, I would be in the wrong business. We had about 5 people and we got 1 star. So I made the right career move there, I think. So I just want to talk about a few things today, but I've got a caveat before we start. This is a 200-level course. I'm not going to get into too much code, but I'm more than happy to answer more detailed questions at the end. I'm going to try and give you some time to come up and ask some stuff if you need to. But we're going to plow through a bit of stuff here about how we do things at Trade Me. So I hope to answer some questions that you guys might have, things that we've been asked a lot about how we do stuff, and hopefully we can all learn something as well. I want to kind of make this talk a little bit about Trade Me, but also about stuff that you can use in your own web projects that might help make things better and faster for you. So first of all, I want to talk about what Trade Me's deployment philosophy is. How do we operate? Do we go really fast? Do we go really slow? Do we have big projects, small projects? Are we agile? Are we waterfall? What do we do? Second of all, okay, that's cool. That's your theory. How often do you push code, and how do you do that? We'll try and tackle that as well. And then thirdly, what is it you're releasing today? Because if you've seen the agenda, there is a live release at the end of this talk. We're going to put a new site up on the web for you to play with. So I guess the one thing I want to just talk about before we start is the context. There's a lot of slides in here that talk about context, and it's really important for us to understand the context in which we're working as web developers and as a business. And we're going to touch on that a little bit as well. So there's also other slides that we might touch on if we get some time. So we're going to move on to the first question, which was deployment at Trade Me. And first of all, I need to give you some context. I said I'd give you lots of context. There's going to be lots in this presentation. So to understand our deployment philosophy, you need to understand a little bit about Trade Me as a company. It's important to understand your own company as well. I know about Trade Me, so I can talk to it. You guys will know how your own company works, but I think the same rules apply. So first of all, what is Trade Me? Does anyone not know what it is? There's a few people in the business, in the audience who are from overseas, so I appreciate there might be some people who don't know what Trade Me is. Hands up if you've used Trade Me before. Okay, most people, cool. So this is Trade Me. This is what it looks like, yeah? Familiar with that one? Cool. Keep your hands up. So hands up if you've used it before. Hands up if you've used it to sell something. Nice. Hands up, keep them up, if you've got feedback of over 50. Feedback over 100? Feedback over 500? Nice work, nice work. You guys would have received a T-shirt and a certificate in the mail, right? Awesome, fantastic. Not wearing it today. That's no good. So yeah, get 500 feedback and you get one of these sweet T-shirts. All right, that's a pretty good incentive to get there. So Trade Me, of course, is the main auction site. And it's also a number of other sites. We've got our motors, our jobs, and our property verticals there as well. We've also got our Find Someone site, which is our dating site. We've also got Old Friends, which is our foray into the social networking space, and has been nominated for a NetGuide Award tonight as one of the 5 best social networking sites in New Zealand. Facebook is on the list as well, so I don't think we're going to do very well there. Holiday Houses is one of our travel sites, as is Travel Bug, and Treat Me is our group buying website. If you came along to Matt and Dave's talk yesterday, you would have seen them talk a bit about this stuff. I'm not going to labor on the point too much. Just as a show of hands, who came along to the session yesterday? Just so I know. Okay, cool. So this was a database track, so I imagine there might be a few less beards in the audience today. This is a web track, not as many beards, cool. What kind of environment do we use? So again, we're a Visual Studio, a Microsoft shop, we use .NET, we code in Visual Studio, we use SQL Server all the way through from 2005 up to 2008 R2 on various things. We've got Windows Server in the background. We use Selenium for our front-end testing, we'll get into that a little bit later on. We use NAND for our scripting of all of our build and deploy things. Functional analysis, static analysis, and stuff like that. We use Subversion as our source control of choice, and jQuery as our front-end JavaScript library of choice. So how popular is the site? So the way I like to talk about this is, if you get one of these prompts up and you type something like this in, what happens? Cool. Uh-oh. Oh, that's bad. When people see this, they think, there's something wrong with my internet. Not TradeMe's down. TradeMe can't go down. Matt and Dave talked about it before. When TradeMe goes down, horrible things happen. The New Zealand stops working. And conversely, we have to work a lot to make it right again. So there's some big numbers. And again, this is about the context within which we work. So it's important, again, to share these with you. I'm going to go over them quite quickly because Matt and Dave talked about them yesterday. But we've got almost 3 million registered members. We've got almost 2 million concurrent listings. 60 million images we've got on disk there. We keep those for ages, which is a challenge in itself. 8.5 million browsers, unique browsers a month, 700,000 visitors each day, 2.5 million emails sent every day, not 25 million as was reported yesterday. At peak, that's 1,700 per second. That's a lot. So when we're deploying, as web devs, we've got to realize that we're moving out into traffic. There's a lot of traffic going by, and for us to pull our car out of the slow lane into that traffic requires some advanced thought. Heaps of images and the 25,000 messageable posts daily. Now, again, go back to the context of all this. What do we need to do as web devs to make sure that we don't screw things up royally and have that request time out up here for people? One of the things is we have to think about the changes we're making when we've got these numbers in the background. If we're making a database change, for example, that might put up a number on the homepage, for example, wouldn't it be cool if you could see how many auctions you're currently winning? Wouldn't that be cool if it was on the homepage? Wouldn't it be cool if we went back to the database every time to find out how many auctions you're currently winning? That wouldn't be cool at all because the site wouldn't work. We've got to have a number of layers that sit between that cool idea and the actual data that comes back, and we're lucky that we do, but we've got to think about that as developers because we can't just assume, oh, I know that number. I'm just going to select count from a particular table, easy, up there on the site, nice big red box, job done. No, very much not. The other thing is if we're in the sort of web dev space as well, we're writing CSS, we're writing HTML. We've got to be very careful that we don't throw up some images that might get served up because the multipliers here are huge, right? Now, if we didn't have a decent caching layer on some of our images, we did some math the other day, we'd be serving up about 18 gigabytes of data a day just on rounded corner images, just to make those nice curly rounded corners on the edges of the boxes. That's quite a lot, especially if you're paying for that bandwidth. Luckily, our caching and our local cache is handling that for us. So again, those are the things you've got to just be careful of. You've got a multiplier, and they're huge multipliers for us. For you guys, it might be slightly different, but you've got to think about it. We also want to talk quickly about the values of the company, because the values are also important to understand how we work. And for you guys, it's important to understand how your values work for the company too. What kind of framework are you operating in? What's the context of the work you're doing? We've got seven core values that we talk about from time to time. I don't think they've ever been put here on a slide in one place. So I'm just going to walk you through them. Number one, build great websites. It's a bit of a no-brainer. What we do, we're a website company. We build a website. You guys use it to buy and sell. Awesome. Now, we need to make sure that website is great. It's fast. It's always available. It's reliable. You can trust it, which is the second point there is we need to make it better all the time. If it's going slow somewhere, we need to measure it. We need to find out which bit's going great, which bit's going slow. If we put that database lookup on the front page and we make our database crawl and our site drops even by a few seconds or microseconds, then it's bad. We need to make that better. Community is key. So we're here, we've got 2.8 million registered members, and New Zealand's not much bigger than that. So we need to make sure that we look after our community. Our community is there. They police us. They tell us when things go wrong, and they praise us when things go right, and we love them. They are key to the organization. They're key to us. And we need to be trusted, okay? So 2.8 million people, they need to be able to trust us. Sam Morgan said once that TradeMe is members giving money to people they've never met for goods they've never seen. How do we make sure that that happens in a trusted and open way? And we have to decide and act on merit. So I was in a meeting the other day with two very senior people at TradeMe. We had our CEO, we had the head of one of our divisions, and we had me and my boss. We're sitting there talking about a product. We have a bunch of devs. One of the guys had been there for only a few weeks. We had this firm idea about how we were going to do something. The team had a much different idea. And they talked to us about it at the start. We're like, yeah, it's a good idea. I don't reckon it's going to work. They went away, came back, did the numbers, came back into that room, and sat down in front of all those senior people and said, this is what we think. And within half an hour of that meeting, we turned around 180 degrees, their idea was right, because that was the one that had the evidence and the merit. So you need to be interrogating your data from wherever you get it, web logs, from your users, everywhere you can get it. Grab that data. That's really important for you to make business decisions and functional decisions about what you work on next. So act on merit, act on evidence. Don't be a dick. I'm sure we've all worked with dicks. Anyone worked with a dick? The Trade Me team are not allowed to put their hand up. Yeah, we've all worked with dicks. When I joined Trade Me, I applied from over in the UK. I applied for the job, and I got my employment contract via email, and I opened it up, and I was working out my notice, and I saw this. I saw Don't Be a Dick stamped on the front page of the employment contract, and I thought, yes! I'm going home to work with people who aren't dicks, because I was working with a bunch of dicks, and I'm really glad that I'm not. The point, though, there is it's not inherently something that makes someone a dick. It's what you do. So think about what you do. Are you doing something just for the sake of it? Are you pissing someone off? Are you making a decision that's got no real merit, but you feel good about it, but you might be saying something and doing one other thing? It's not cool. When you've got 2.8 million people who look at depend on you for their revenue and to engage in that marketplace activity, they don't want to be working with dicks. We don't want to be dicks. I think I've said dick enough. Hire and grow great people. We are hiring. So if you're sitting out there and thinking, I'm not a dick, I'm a good coder, I'm a good database guy, I know some stuff, I want to move to Wellington. Wellington's great. Then let us know. We're hiring. I'll say it a few times. Okay, enough context. I want to talk to you about the stuff that you probably want to know. What is TradeMe's deployment philosophy? So we're a big site. We're kind of slightly agile, I suppose, with a capital A. We do some things in a sort of agile fashion. We follow Scrum to some degree. We don't sort of subscribe to it, though. We don't go out and say, we're a Scrum shop. We do Scrum. But we take bits of different processes and use them as we see fit. I guess the key thing, though, is we aren't afraid to deploy stuff. We will deploy things a lot, frequently, every day, twice a day, in fact, sometimes more often. We want to fail fast, and we want to recover faster. What does that mean? Well, Trade Me is a big site, you might say. We can't. What if we break something? It's going to go horribly wrong. There's lots of traffic. We need to be careful. There's people who depend on this stuff. It's also very hard to simulate production load. So we need to. How do we do that? We had a question yesterday in the database track that said, how do you guys simulate production load? The answer is with production users. But we need to recover very fast. It's not always true. We do load testing as well behind the scenes. But quite often, that's how we find out about stuff. So if that's the case, if that is your testing strategy, I'm not saying it is, but if that is, then you need to recover really, really quickly, because those people are going to be pissed off. So all of this stuff is true regardless of how often you deploy. For you, for me, we deploy twice a day. You might deploy once every 3 months. It doesn't matter. That stuff is still true. You have a site of a certain size. You have an audience of a certain size. You have a volume of traffic of a certain size, and you have a pattern that might follow. That's fine. All that stuff is true regardless of how often you deploy. So why not deploy more often than not? What's stopping you from deploying often? My predecessor, Rowan, who's one of the original devs on TradeMe, in fact, I think employee number 3, maybe, said this in his blog in 2007. We prefer to make a start, see how it goes, and modify our approach as required. We need to be prepared to be wrong some or most of the time, and have a plan to get quickly back on our feet. That's still true for us, and I think it's probably still true of most sites that deploy frequently and have large volumes of traffic, and probably any site, to be honest. So that's our philosophy. How do we actually deploy code? How do we actually get that out there? So I'm going to talk you through the actual process of how an idea gets generated within TradeMe and then is actually pushed out onto the servers and is seen as a feature for you guys. But I also want to talk about our team structure a little bit as well, because I think that's important to understand. Again, the context is important. This is a question, by the way, we get asked a lot. People come to the offices and they see our teams working and they go, how do your teams work? How many devs do you have? How many testers do you have? What do you do? Are you agile? Whatever. Well, we used to have a big pool of developers and testers. They look something like that. Does anyone here have kids under the age of 10? Any of them play junior soccer? Anyone? Has anyone seen anyone play junior soccer? You've seen where the ball goes, all of the kids are. So with a big pool of developers and testers, sometimes that can happen if you don't manage it carefully. So it's great, though, because you've got lots of people working on a problem, big pool of developers and testers, you throw them a problem, chances are someone in that team can fix it. That's all great, but it's not very efficient. So there are better ways of doing it for us. For you, your mileage may vary. So what we did was we formed cross-functional project teams. And they look like this. In fact, that is a cross-functional project team. Two of the team are actually here today. We've got typically three developers in a team and a tester. That ratio works out probably okay. If the testers were here today, they'd say it doesn't work enough. It's not enough testers. But it works out okay for us. And this is modeled on what Amazon call their two pizza team, which is the team size that you can feed with two pizzas. And the pedants out in the audience will say, well, it depends on the size of the pizza. Also depends on the size of the developer. So we don't use that analogy. We just say three developers and a tester. We're not sizist. But again, it's about context. Whatever works for you. For us, this works well. We also have assorted support roles. So we have database, we have platform, we have design, and we have business analysis as well that provide support to those teams as they go through their cycles. In addition, we have stakeholders. So again, going back to that soccer analogy, with the big team moving around the field chasing after the ball, we've broken that down into lots of little teams. But you still need to have someone who controls those teams and say, hey, this is what you need to work on now. And so we have stakeholders associated with the business, who've got an interest in a particular part of the site. So for example, the jobs, the property, the motors sites, they would be stakeholders of a team. And we have a cycle master. And again, this is us trying not to use the word scrum master, but it's kind of the same thing if you follow scrum. It's someone who looks after the running of the team for that cycle. And it's not a role at TradeMe. We're not hiring for a scrum master or a cycle master. It's just a hat that you might wear from time to time. And so the devs and testers, they'll switch that around to keep themselves fresh and to focus on other things. So one dev might be particularly busy for that cycle, so the cycle master role might move to the tester, for example. We switch that around all the time, and they make sure that the cycle runs smoothly. So the theory behind our cycles, we went theory first and then into the actual practical. It's important that we have priorities. So again, we've got those stakeholders. They want to tell us certain stuff about how we should run, what our first task should be, what our second task should be. It's important that we know what they are. We can't just make a guess. The business has got to run. The business has got key drivers. What are they? We like to deploy on Wednesdays, Wednesday mornings if we can. It's a good time of the week for us. It's not too early in the week. It's not too late, so we're not getting too close to the weekend. We kind of stick with Wednesdays if we can. We also need a good idea of how big the bits of work that we're working on are. Test-driven development. Does anyone, any devs in the audience use TDD? A few? It's pretty cool. It's awesome, but it's hard to get set up. It's also one of the things you kind of sacrifice if you can't do it. Now, it's pretty awesome. We don't do enough of it, I don't think. We'd like to do more. But irrespective of whether you do TDD or not, we need a test phase as well. We need to be able to test at the end. We need to make sure that our integration, our post-merge packages that we put up on the site are cool. They're okay. They work after everyone else's stuff has been checked in. And demos are good. Demos are really good. Demos are good for two reasons. One is that it gives the rest of the dev team an insight into what you're working on without taking up too much of their time. They can come into a room for 10 minutes and see, oh, yep, that page has just changed now. We've put that on the left. We've changed this functionality around. We've got a feedback here. All that stuff is cool. We can see it really quickly. We can capture high bandwidth change understanding with a demo. It's also good because the stakeholders need to know what we've been working on for the last 2 weeks. And they also want to know before it goes live on the site. So they've got a couple of days to go, all right, that's cool. We need to put some comms out to the community about this because they're going to get upset that we've changed the font color from yellow to slightly off yellow. So our cycles. 3 week iterations work really well for us. It's the best trade-off for us between the time coding and the release number of, the number of cycles per year that we can release, our sort of velocity, if you like. It matches nicely with the number of concurrent teams we have. We have three concurrent cross-functional teams at the moment. That works pretty well. We'll probably get more very shortly. It means also that the maximum wait for a new item, an idea you just came up with, is about 5.5 weeks. So if you just miss the cutoff on the current cycle, you wait for 3 weeks for the cycle to finish, it goes into the next cycle, it's deployed 2.5 weeks after that, that's 5.5 weeks. It's not too bad. We do have the facility to push little things out much earlier than that, and often we do, and sometimes even big things go out with a much smaller window. But usually, if it's a kind of a strategic piece of an idea, 5.5 weeks is a pretty good run rate. And we factor in downtime and pet project time. Developers can't work at 100% 100% of the time. They will burn out, they will leave, they will go home and cry, they will eat both pizzas. We don't want them to do that. We want them to have time to think about new things, to unwind, to step away from the TradeMe site, think about some other stuff. Hopefully useful for the business, hopefully useful for themselves from a development point of view, but it's a pet project time they can just unwind and work on. Google's got a 20% time thing. This is kind of like that. We don't stick a number on it because it varies, but there is time scheduled in each cycle for our developers to do something other than the cycle work, to unwind a bit. So a cycle looks like this. It's Friday. We go into an estimation and prioritization session. We estimate how much work it's going to take. We get reasonably good at this over time, and we can sort of fall back on our previous estimates. We look at yesterday's weather, it's called in the kind of the agile community. See what went before, and we can use that as a gauge of what's going to come up next. We prioritize stuff with the stakeholders. They tell us what we should be working on next. Monday, we start work. Everyone's really keen, maybe slightly hungover, but keen. Every morning we get together, have a daily stand-up. Again, agile with a capital A. We get together, really easy, just say, what did you work on yesterday? What are you working on tomorrow? Is there anything in your way? Can I help? Then we work for 2 weeks. Often there's other stuff going on as well, but pretty much 2 weeks of just devving and testing. On the second Friday of the three-week cycle, we go into a demo. The demo's good because all the reasons we said before. Hopefully nothing's come out of that demo that means we need to change stuff. On the Monday, we have our merge, but we can also do some coding changes on that Monday as well if we need to. So the Monday merge might be in the morning, might be in the afternoon. Sometimes it might even be on Tuesday morning. All going well, we'll go into that pre-deploy testing I talked about. So we're TDDing all the way through. We're doing testing as we go. But in the end, when we integrate stuff, we've done our merge, we're back in trunk, we need to test that, make sure it's not going to break the site. This is when we might do our load testing that I said we didn't do. Then on Wednesday morning, we deploy. Fingers crossed, hopefully, it goes out on the Wednesday morning. Sometimes it might slip. If it's going to slip, we pretty much slip it to Thursday. We don't push out on a Wednesday afternoon. In fact, our Wednesday morning deploy this week went out this morning. So, again, there was good reasons for that. Then on Thursday and Friday, it's pet project time. There's a few things that the team have to do on the Thursday and Friday, of course. We have a debrief for the cycle, what went well, what went wrong, what can we fix for next time. And also then on the Friday, there's the estimation and planning session for the next one. Rinse and repeat. So if you look at the sort of cycle, this is a fairly obvious slide, but it seemed good to me at the time. We've obviously got one cycle running, one of our cross-functionals. We've got two, we've got three. It means every week there is a cross-functional deploy happening on the site. But I mentioned before that the cross-functional teams are not the only teams we have. We have this team called a Kanban team. Does anyone know what Kanban is? A few people. It's a Japanese word that means no more cans. No, it's a Japanese word that means signboard. And basically what it is a way of visualizing work in progress. I want to say this is a board from a while ago, because obviously if you know Kanban, you can see there's a massive bottleneck there in the ready to test column. Anyone a tester? We are hiring for testers. No? So this is from a while ago. But the idea is you reduce the work in progress by having a pull system. So each of the different streams there, deployment, test, dev, pulls from the previous column into that when they've got capacity to do so. So Kanban deploys all the time. They don't follow that three-weekly cycle. They deploy twice a day, in the morning and in the afternoon. We have a mobile team. Anyone got an iPhone here? Don't worry, you won't be. I'll put it another way. Anyone got an iPhone in their household? Cool. We've got an iPhone app. These guys work on it. They also work on a few other things, our mobile site, and a few other bits and pieces that we aren't ready to talk about just yet, but they're good guys. We have a bridge team as well. Bridge team exists between the design and the development team. It's a new team that we've just formed recently. We didn't want to call it the UI or the front-end team because we do UI and front-end stuff all over the place. But every now and then we have a piece of work that's huge and it's mainly just HTML, CSS, JavaScript stuff. So we have a team that looks after that. It means the developers can get on with the, the, the core code side of things. These guys can build the front end. It's sort of the V and the MVC model, if you like. These guys look after the HTML, CSS stuff. And they're called Bridge because they bridge the gap between the design and development team. Yeah? Cool. We have a systems team, and these guys are responsible for, among other things, our API, which I'll talk about in a sec. Big refactoring projects, which we have a few of. They look after our internal tooling, which I'll show you some in a sec. And also random other stuff. Anybody here from Christchurch? Awesome. You might have seen this website. This is a website we built for the government, for the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Association, Authority, called CERA, which basically tells you how badly damaged your property is in Christchurch. I'm a Cantabrian, so it was, you know, very proud to be able to work on this website for CERA. We got a phone call on Saturday afternoon at a rugby game from someone from CERA saying, hey guys, can you tell us anyone who might be able to build this website for us? And we said, yeah, we can tell you some people who might be able to build it, but we can't tell you anyone who could host it because you're going to get a heap of traffic on that launch day. So we built it for them. I got a phone call confirming our team was going to be ready on Sunday. Monday morning, we walked into the office and said, guys, whatever you thought you were doing this week, you're not doing that anymore. You're building this website. So this website is it's germane to this discussion because it's something we built and deployed in 3.5 days. We used MVC2, we used Link, and we also used OOCSS for the front-end side of things, which was a really cool way of writing object-oriented CSS. If you need to know more about that, oocss.org. Great resource to go check out. Really, really cool, especially for, you know, programmer designers. Sure enough, that's the traffic. That big spike, page impressions, about 4 million in the first hour and a half, give or take, depending on how you judge it. So what happened when it went live? John Key went on TV on Thursday, and about 1:41 p.m. he said, landcheck.org.nz, bam. These guys got freaked out. The database team went, whoa! We spun up a bunch of servers. We've got a lot of servers at TradeMe. Not as many as you might think, but quite a lot of capacity. And we were able to deal with a little bit of a brownout for the first couple of minutes and then serve up the site, no problems at all. Doubtful that many other places in New Zealand could have dealt with that kind of level of infrastructure in 3.5 days. So it was really, you know, really proud of the guys who worked on that. So this is the team that worked on it. There's an old one out. Okay, I want to give you a bit of how our case works, a life cycle of a case. I'm going to race through this a little bit. But first of all, there's an idea process. I mentioned this before. You've got an idea at TradeMe, doesn't matter who you are, you've got a really good idea, add some new features to the site, and then profit. You send an email to a secret email address that we all read, and then the next Wednesday or sometime afterwards, there's a session with the CEO, the head of technology, a few other people in the business, around a pool table, and you've got kind of a couple of minutes to make your pitch. Why is this a good idea? What does the question mark represent? What do we do there in the middle to make that profit? So we have those discussions, and then any number of outcomes can occur from that. We can go, no, we'll shelve that. We can say, yes, we like it. We're going to do it later. We're already thinking about that. We might say, great idea. We're going to put it into a cycle and work on it straight away. So assuming we go into a cycle, at that point, we're in cycle mode. So we talked about the process of the cycle. Now we're talking about the actual practicality. The theory's done. This is the practice of the cycle. So we branch from trunk. First of all, we go, okay, we've got a new cycle. We're going to create our own branch from the trunk, and we're going to work in that for the rest of the cycle. Anyone in the team can do that. Anyone in the cross-functional team has the ability, the power to create a branch. We aren't worried too much about people messing up subversion. Well, we are, but we let people do it. Each branch has its own separate environment. That means they've got their own database that gets refreshed from our test database, our scrubbed production data that they can play with and test. As I said, anyone on the team can organise that because our SVN's foo is strong, because it's got to be. Because we release so often, we have to be good at our source control. So I encourage you all as developers to know how your source control works. Know the tricks, know the tips. Then we move into Visual Studio. We've only just recently moved to Visual Studio 2010. It's a bit embarrassing. We've been on 2008 for a while, but we're in 2010 now with all the cool kids, which is great. Actually, the cool kids are moving on to the next thing, but that's all right. we're staying on 2010. So we code in there and we do our code reviews. That process happens over those days and weeks of that cycle. What we then do is commit back to the branch. And I've chosen one of our devs who is here today to be the kind of the guy who I'm going to pick on. So Willie is the guy who wrote this piece of code that I'm going to show. This is a thing called Package Manager. What this does is allows us to group all the changed ASPX files and CSS JavaScript files, all the flat files, our source files, and any SQL changes we're making as well. So stored proc changes, all that sort of stuff. We package that together as a piece of functional work. And we use Package Manager to track its process through the deploy system. So you can see here that Willie has made a piece of work called 19113 Father's Day Gift Ideas 2011. And if you've been on the site in the last week or so, you'll see that's up on the site. There's a Father's Day gift page. And Willie's responsible. He's down the front if you don't get what you wanted for Father's Day. I can click into that. I can see what the package entails. I can see all the files in there. I can see any conflicts there. I can look at that big thing down the bottom there, big red exclamation mark. I can see there's contention on that file. So I know that I've got to be careful when I'm deploying this because I might have other things that I need to be careful of. I need to untangle as I go out. I can click on revisions and see what the differences are between those revisions. So I can look into Willie's change there and I can see that he has spent an entire day removing 6 pixels from 0 pixels. There is pretty awesome work there from Willie, so that's great. I mean, there are other files that he's changed as well, so you know, lots of blank lines and comments in those files probably. We've all done it. Then we go into Release Manager. So Release Manager is the thing that we use to push to our various environments. I'll come back to this in a minute. But in this case, we're pushing it to test, the local test environment for our branch. We go into the testing phase. Now, we do a lot of testing. We ought to write more unit tests than we do, which I think is the mantra of developers everywhere. But unit tests are great. They allow us to test the business logic of the application. We then have static analysis tools that run across the code. What's crap in the code? What's awesome in the code? Have we passed all our static analysis tests? We use Selenium on the front end because unit tests and static analysis is good. We can see what our code's doing. But if it doesn't manifest as behavior that we want the users to experience on the site, then we're doing it wrong. So we have a Selenium front-end test that we run, and we automate those as much as we can. We have functional and manual tests as well. So our testers, when they're not writing Selenium tests and scripts and things, they're actually testing the site. There's no better way of testing your system than having someone actually click through it. Ideally, you want to limit that to the times that you really need it because it's labor-intensive, but you still need to do it. And we also do performance testing. It's not on the slide because I wrote that slide before the chap asked me yesterday. Then on that Monday, the final Monday of the last week, we go into the merge. Again, it can be run by any developer. We usually choose one to do it. They look after it. We try and get back into trunk as soon as we can because we don't want to be contending with anything else. We want to get in there and be clean. It can still be pretty painful. So Subversion is a great source control tool. It's not the best by any means. It's what we're used to, so it's good for us. But there are better ways of doing it, I think, and we're looking at those at the moment. So maybe next year we'll have a talk on what we've done differently. We've got NANT there running, which is all of our scripting that we do on the code. Gets all the files that we need to deploy, runs a SQL, compiles them using MS Build. We've got the UE compressor, which compresses our JavaScript and CSS. Again, if we didn't do this, we'd be pushing out gigs and gigs of data we didn't need to do. Our stored procs run on the environment, and we make sure that the database is up to speed. And then the code is copied out, and those static tests are run. Our Selenium scripts are run. The package is then marked as in test, and our testers can go hard at it and do the functional testing they need to do it. Then we push to production once the testing is finished. This is simplifying it slightly, but we push that out. We've got web services that run on all our web servers. We can target different web servers and say, this code is going out to that web server. Typically, we'll send it out to all the web servers because they all need it. But if we need to do a targeted deploy, we have tools to do that. We can say, take that one web server out of the pool. We're going to just test that ourselves with this change. And then if it's all good, we're going to put it back into the pool and push the change out to everybody. You might have something similar like this at your organization. This is something we've rolled our own because we have peculiar ways of doing things. Specific to the amount of traffic and things we get, but this is important. You don't want to be manually copying stuff up. So the targeted deploy I mentioned there, we can do that with a command. We can also roll back. Really, really, really important to be able to do this. So when we push the code up to the web servers, what happens is they get copied to a temp directory, they get unzipped, ready to go, and then they pause. The process stops. We take a backup of the currently running application, and then we say, are you really ready to push this stuff out to production? We go, yes. And it swaps it over, we recycle the app pool, the new code's running. If we need to roll back, we press a button. The opposite of that happens, and we're back running the previous version of the application in seconds. Really important. Again, fail fast, recover faster. I mentioned Kanban deploying a couple of times a day. This is a sort of kind of a slightly anormal graph of our traffic, because there's that massive big spike there for some weird reason. On the day I chose, there must have been something happening at that point, or it's just anomalous data. But the point is, we deploy in the morning and we deploy in the afternoon, because that's when the site's least busy while we're at work. That afternoon deploy, you can see if we make it too late, we start going up on that hill there. And if it gets too late, we climb to the peak and bad stuff happens. We don't want to be pushing code out while there's so many users on the site. So those are our deploy windows. That's our week. Kanban twice a day. On a Wednesday, we have a cross-functional as well. Question mark on Friday. What happens on Friday? We take a break. We have a beer, sometimes some snacks. Also, weekends are pretty busy. So we don't want to push out code on the weekends if we can help it. Sometimes bugs may not manifest until we're under lots of load. And we want to keep the on-call team happy. We don't want them to be paged and called out in the middle of the night, particularly on Sundays. So how do we know when stuff's gone wrong? As I mentioned before, we can roll back, but how do we know when things go wrong? Well, we monitor and we alert ourselves when things go wrong. We've got Murray there from the bridge team pointing at a graph because I asked him to. But also because everyone in the dev team can see those charts. They're running all the time. If this graph in the bottom right-hand corner, I've got a button here, this one here, spikes up, bad stuff happens on the site. That means the 500s are going up. We error log, we centralize our error logging. The good thing about that is it means we can drill into those logs. So here's a snapshot of our production log database grouped by the type of exception. Uh-oh, no reference exception. What happened? We can drill into that and see exactly what that error was. If you don't know what the errors are throwing on your webs on your production website, the only way of finding out about errors is by trying to replicate it in test. Again, you're doing it wrong. You've got data. Your web logs tell you heaps of stuff. The error messages that you get on the production site tell you heaps. You need to be able to see those. You need to be able to sort them and look at them. And so if we see anything happening on that graph that we don't like, we'll drill into it and work out what it is, fix it. Okay, I've talked enough about our deployment process. You can ask me questions at the end. I want to move on quickly. What are we releasing today? Before we release it, I want to talk quickly about innovation at TradeMe. We have a number of ways of fostering innovation. We have FedEx days. I don't know if you've heard of the concept before, but a FedEx day is you've got 24 hours to deliver something. We have teams of three. We get into teams of three. The entire company is invited to form up a team and take part. And if anyone went to Webstock this year, a guy called Michael Lopp, who's a bit of a hero of mine, at Rands on Twitter, writes a book called Being Geek and Managing Humans, had a talk about the kinds of personality types that you need to run a successful startup. So we've borrowed that idea and used it. Our next FedEx day is going to have this as a criteria. Three types of role: a dictator, a designer, and a developer. Someone who writes the thing or makes the thing. Someone who says what it should look like, designs it, architects it. And then someone to say, you stop doing that, keep doing that. That's good, that's bad. I'm making an executive decision. Because if you leave it to the developer and the designer, you're going to end up in a squirrely mess. You need those three disciplines to make things go on time in a 24-hour cycle. We're going to give that a go. It may work, it may not. Then finally, at the end of the 24 hours, all the teams get up and they present to the entire company or everyone who's interested. And we have a popular vote, so that the team that has the most votes from the floor wins. Very simple. But also, we have a kind of a dragon's den thing along the side. So our executive committee will sit there, the big stakeholders, ones who can make the decisions, and they'll say, yes, I'm going to invest in your idea. We're going to do that on TradeMe, or I'm going to give you some cash to go out and buy the material you need to do that thing. There's a number of ways that they can invest as dragons, and it means that you've got a popular vote that might not be practical for the site, but you've also got other good ideas that we can actually take forward and use as an extension of TradeMe. We also built an API. I don't know if you've seen it. Anyone use the API or knows where it is? Awesome, fantastic, a few people. So it lives at developer.trademe.co.nz, or the documentation for it does. Go there, check it out. To build the API, we needed to refactor a bunch of stuff, Doing the browse side, the reading side was easy. Well, comparatively easy, but write was really hard. But I'm very pleased to say, and it's only been out for a few days, so this is kind of a new announcement, that we now have the ability to list in the API. So any of you guys who are out there who have used the API, who wanted to be able to list, you can do it now. Go to that website, you can get the documentation for it, go for your life. If there's any bugs, let the team know. The reason why Cell was hard is we had to write an API sandbox because we couldn't have people testing on the live site. It's okay to test searches on the live site, that's fine, it's read-only. When you're writing things, unless you're going to sell all your worldly possessions as part of your application development process, you need somewhere else to do it without actually having to sell stuff. And our terms and conditions prohibit people pretending to sell things on the site and then not. So we built a sandbox. That was pretty hard, actually, harder than we thought. But the good news is now we've got lots of people using it, lots of consumers out there using it, lots of applications, things doing things we didn't think of, things we would have never had time to do. Also ourselves, we are eating our own dog food. Again, the question about the iPhone, if you've got an iPhone, you can see that as of 2 days ago, you can now sell stuff through your phone. It's awesome. Take a photo of the thing you don't want, list it on the site, sell it 3 to 7 days later. It's pretty cool. The growth of that's been huge. 2% of sales are now through the app, and that's growing. So I mentioned it on Tuesday, you can now list stuff, and we're open to anyone else who wants to write any other applications for other platforms. If you want to write a Windows Phone 7 app, please do. We encourage you to. I want to just get a couple of people up quickly to talk about a couple of their experiences with the API before we move on and actually launch the thing we're going to launch. So I'd like to invite Elliot up first just to quickly talk about what Careers NZ is doing with their API. Elliot, big round of applause, Elliot.
My name is Elliot Sawyer. I'm a web developer with Careers New Zealand. I'm here to tell you how we've integrated some of TradeMe's API into our own applications. Hi, my name is Elliot Sawyer. I'm a web developer with Careers New Zealand. I'm here today to tell you about how we've integrated TradeMe's API with some of our applications. First tool I want to show you is the Canterbury Skills Matcher. The February Canterbury earthquake damaged everything solid about Christchurch. Key buildings in the city crumbled, the ground boiled, the CBD was practically destroyed. 181 people died on that day, and thousands of jobs were lost. At Careers New Zealand, we were wondering what we could do to help. So we built this tool. We created this tool that identifies your transferable skills and matches them with career paths. Careers New Zealand reused data and code from a previously developed tool to make this possible. With a little bit of extra work, we were able to match these careers with relevant and current vacancies using TradeMe's API. We also use the API to estimate the demand. We also use the API to estimate the demand for a given job to answer the question, where are the jobs at? We've developed an interactive job vacancy map using the TradeMe API that shows where and how many vacancies there are for a given New Zealand career. We love the API. It's an amazing tool. It's been very easy to use. It's web-based, it's RESTful, it's platform-independent, so we can develop in any language that we want. It has a lively support community forum in case you get stuck on any issues. If anything comes up, you can just post a question on the forum and somebody will usually answer it right away. The only issue we really had with it was with authenticated calls. Authentication was tricky, but it was well worth the trouble to learn it. It practically eliminated the usage quota that we had with TradeMe, and we were able to develop a library that future applications could use immediately if they needed to authenticate. The TradeMe API has enabled us to make very creative, innovative, and useful applications with minimal effort, and ultimately the public benefits from it. We're creating a better public service for people. We look forward to everything that TradeMe's been doing with the API, and we look forward to continue working with them.
Fantastic. Thank you, Elliot. Cheers. I'd like to also welcome up Evan Williams from Tradevine. Evan.
Thank you, Simon. Cheers. Hi, everyone. My name is Evan Williams. I'm the architect at a startup based in Christchurch called Tradevine. We're in the beta stages of launching our product, which is a SaaS-based web application aimed at SMEs and used to help them sell online and manage their order workflow. Our product is designed to be the hub of an online business, the place where a seller would manage his or her products, and that includes pricing, photos, inventory, as well as their customers and suppliers, their sales and purchase orders, as well as the shipments and receipts of those orders. And as a result of being that hub, you can run reports and see metrics about how your business is doing. We aim to be to enable multi-channel selling, initially through TradeMe, also with your own web shop, your own e-commerce shopping cart, which we provide out the box, and then ultimately in the future also online marketplaces like Amazon and Google. We also integrate with your back-end accounting engine. Currently this just means Xero, but we'll bring other platforms online in the future. And this we use for invoicing, for keeping your stock on hand accounts up to date, and also for checking payments to see when you can ship orders. We also manage your suppliers and your purchasing, sending POs to your suppliers, and then also contacting couriers to create consignments automatically for shipping. Right, the TradeMe API is pretty straightforward. I mean, the first step is to go into Tradevine. You press the button which says authorize TradeMe. It then redirects you to the TradeMe site. It asks you to log in with your TradeMe credentials. It asks you whether you want to authorize Tradevine to access your data. And if you say yes, we store an access token which we can then use on the user's behalf for future authentication of requests. Right, next, Tradevine will automatically create listings for all your products, and we handle things like category metadata, photos, fixed, start, reserve, buy now prices, as well as dynamic pricing, where you know it's based on maybe your cost price or your retail sale price plus a configurable percentage. We then obviously aggregate all your view counts, your bids, where the reserves have been met. We periodically pull through questions and pull them into a central place so that a seller can quickly answer questions to his listings, including answers that he's already posted. So it can quickly enable you to go through the whole process of answering questions. And then when an auction is won or a buy now is purchased, we create a sales order in Tradevine. We then also create an authorized accounts receivable invoice in Xero. And then we then periodically check TradeMe to find the buyer's delivery address details, and we also check Xero to find out when payment has been made. Once those two conditions have been met, our order then moves to awaiting shipment. We print pick lists to go get the stock out of inventory. We print paper pack lists and invoices to go in the box, contact the courier company. If there's any part of the order hasn't been fulfilled, we'll automatically create a back order. And at that stage, our system can either automatically place positive feedback if all's gone well, or the user can place feedback manually if he wishes to. So that's basically it. I'll be around if you've got any technical questions as well. But it's been a very positive experience so far. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan. Cheers. So there's lots of innovation going on. It's really cool. Elliot and Evan are two cases, and there's heaps more. People doing cool stuff with our API and our platform that we didn't have time to do, we hadn't thought of, and just adding value all over the place, if I can use that business term. We want to promote it, though. We want to promote the innovation that's going on. And TradeMe, historically, has never been a very good place to do that. We have a community that we can use. We've got our message boards, our site announcements. But we can't really endorse stuff there. It's hard for us to endorse things. And often we want to keep an arm's length slightly from what we're doing on the main site to what we're doing in that sort of innovation space. So today we are launching Trade Me Labs at labs.trademe.co.nz. And I know that you guys have all got about 9 different web-enabled devices on your person right now. So I'm going to try and do a live demo on Trade Me Labs for you. So I'll just flick over to that one. There we go. This is the lab site. So basically what it is a showcase of all the projects and projects that our own development team have been working on that aren't related to Trade Me. So those FedEx days, the outcomes of those, some of the projects we work on are going to go up on the site. Also the third parties like Evan and Elliot and others also up on the site. I'll just give you a quick tour of the site as well. So we've got projects here. You can see some of these projects. We've got things like a Chrome extension. We've got our iPhone app, of course, the API. We've got this cool thing I'll show you in a second, which is a region bid visualization. We've got our sandbox. You can go there to find out how to get onto that. We've got a cool visualization and a project called Get a Home, which one of our developers has built, which I'll show you as well. And we've got this cool little widget down the side here, our deploy stats, this guy. So we stole this from code.flickr.com. They do the same thing, just highlighting who's worked on Trade Me or one of our sister sites recently. So you can see here that Ashley, that guy, deployed Treat Me 23 minutes ago. And in the last 7 days, we deployed 67 changes to 9 applications. If you were here, if I was showing you this morning, you would have seen the morning deploy go out, which had about 12 people in it. We've got other cool stuff in here too, like the regional job search, which we saw. Also, New Zealand Post have built a Trade Me parcel tracking tool to allow you to key in, if you're using our API, to link your NZ Post tracking number with the auction ID so that when you send the link to somebody, not only did they just get a number, they also get the picture of the auction, the cost, all the information about the auction they've just won. That makes it easy to manage multiple tracking numbers. So let me just show you Get a Home. This is the project that one of our developers, Daniel McKenzie, wrote. And it's a web-based, mobile-optimized site that uses the Trade Me API to find open homes currently, in this case, in Wellington. So I can drill into that, and I can see that this place is open. This is perfect for me if I've got a tablet or a slate device, which I'm told is the proper way of saying that. And I'm out and about in the city. I'm looking for a house. I want to go onto this site, and I can look for open homes near me. So I can geolocate. I can find there's an open home up the road, and I can plan my weekend's activity finding houses. This is all using properties that are listed on the Trade Me API. We've also got, obviously, jobs are listed there as well, so if you're interested in tech, this is a good place to come. I encourage you to sign up, follow Trade Me Labs on Twitter. If you want to find out more information about new stuff that's going on this website. Also, if you want to find out what the tech team are up to and who they are, there's a list of all of our techs here on this page, and you can drill in to this guy here who's got a pie as an icon for some reason. Certainly not one of our 2 pizza teams. But everyone at Trade Me who's in tech is pretty much on here, minus a couple. I'm on there as well. So if you want to say hi, our Twitter handles are on there. If you want to follow us on Twitter and see what we're up to, I encourage you to do that. The key thing about Labs for us, though, is it's an evolving thing. We've got a few projects on there now to launch with, but we're going to put more and more on. We've got a big responsibility as Trade Me, as a big web presence in New Zealand. We want to foster innovation in this country. We want to help you guys do cool things both with our site and with your own stuff. So even if you're not using the API and you're doing something really cool with the web, maybe you've got a cool HTML5 visualization you want to show off, flick us an email. Send me a tweet on that Twitter handle. We might showcase your stuff as well, even if it's not got anything to do with Trade Me. Because we want to help foster the innovation in this country, because we're pretty proud of this little place. I certainly was very proud to come home from a time over in the UK. Let me just flick back to the presentation. I mentioned Labs itself. It's obviously built with latest technologies. We're using HTML5 behind the scenes. We're using CSS3. There's a bit of OOCSS in there as well. I showed you the deploy stat. It only had the one for Treat Me before, but this morning it had that for the morning deploy, so lots of people involved. And this is another project that's on there at the moment. This is a visualization taken in real time, so it's a real-time snapshot, only time shifted a couple of weeks ago. So this is looking at maybe Wednesday or Thursday 2 weeks ago of actual bids and buy now happening on the site in the North Island. So you can see it updating. That's someone making a bid, someone doing a buy now, and it shows the listing there as well, all pulled from the API, written by that guy down here, Jay in the front row, which is pretty cool. Also, this is our source code. This is like Operation Swordfish. It's pretty awesome. This is a visualization tool called Gorce. It's open source, G-O-U-R-C-E. Look it up on your favorite search engine. And what it does is you plug it into your SVN logs or any source control logs, and it visualizes that. So you can see the little flashes there. Sorry about the poor quality, but the little flashes are chickens. And as new folders and new files are added, new branches appear. It's fascinating to watch, particularly if you know, oh, that was the weekend we just deployed that whole new thing. Like that big green blob just appeared. That was probably one of our earlier verticals that we released, motors or jobs or property. So that's it. That's me done. Hopefully you've got a couple of minutes for questions. I want to say thank you very much for listening. We talked about the deploy process at TradeMe. Hopefully there's some stuff you can take away for use in your own companies. If you've got any questions, I've got 2 or 3 minutes right now, but also come up afterwards and ask me. You can even get a prize from Jay. Are there any questions? Yes. So there's no e-commerce bent to labs at all, not even from TradeMe. That's as of right now. It may change. But for the moment, all we want to do is just showcase cool stuff that we've been working on and that you guys are working on as well. So no, not at the moment. Questions? Yeah. Sorry, the servers? Yeah, so the question was how do we break down our source code into functional areas? So yes, we have different solutions. We're one big solution for the main TradeMe solution, and there are lots of projects within that. So that's within the Visual Studio solution itself. In our source repository, like everyone's source repository, it's a bit of a mess. We know where stuff is, but as I said, we're probably transitioning out of Subversion into a new source control framework in the future. And one of the reasons for that is we need to tidy things up a little bit. So we do have a kind of a structure, but it's a bit ad hoc and a bit over the place. So yeah, I can talk you through that afterwards if you'd like. I think we've got two more minutes. Any more questions? Yes. How long does an auth token last, and can you revoke it? So yes, you can revoke it, and how long it lasts, I can't recall. I think it's about a year. Yeah, thanks. About a year. But yeah, so if you give your permission to an application like Evans or Elliott's, then at any time you can go, and like Facebook Connect, you can go and say, I don't want this application using my data anymore. So yeah, you can totally revoke that. Any other questions? Yeah. The question is, how do we refactor our API or our code for our API, and do we have any support for backwards compatibility? So the answer is we do have versioning support we've built into our API, but it's not using any pattern or framework or anything like that. We've, again, rolled our own. The refactoring I talked about was for us to be able to build the API in the first place. If you think about where TradeMe's come from, Sam Morgan coding on his laptop 12 years ago, he didn't know about the kind of volumes he was going to have to deal with today, 2011. So we had business logic in the webs, we had business logic in the database, we didn't have a very good separation of concerns. Sam, to be honest, he wasn't a coder, he was fiddling, right? And so the site's grown up around that, and we have worked with that legacy. We started off as a classic ASP website, we've moved to VB.net, C#, and we're constantly refactoring to get that stuff into a nice separated tiered structure. So yeah, that's where the refactoring happens. Half a minute left. Any more questions? No? Fantastic. If you've got any questions, come up and see me afterwards. But thank you very much. You've been a great audience. Cheers.